Hey guys, we're going to get to the show in just a second, but I'd like to take a moment to give a shout out to the sponsor of this episode, and that's Podcorn. So what is Podcorn? If you're looking to do a podcast and you want to monetize it and you want a really simple way to do it, then Podcorn is the answer. And I've been using Podcorn now for several weeks, actually months, and it has been one of the simplest ways to get a sponsor for your podcast. It's extremely easy to use. There are dozens and dozens of opportunities, and it has really helped out my show because prior to coming across Podcorn, it's not easy, right? It's kind of confusing. There's not a very simple way to go and find a sponsor for your show, and Podcorn takes all of the thinking out of it, all of that hard work. And it simplifies the experience and simplifies the process because you just go in and you're able to find what you want, find a sponsor that matches with your audience, submit a proposal, and boom. It's very easy to do. It's podcorn.com. So it's really just a marketplace to connect podcasters to an amazing opportunity. I mean, you can do ads such as reads, interview segments, topical discussions, a ton more, and there's no middleman. So you set your own rates, and then you work with the brand to come up with a plan, and it is extremely easy to use. So you never give up any rights to your podcast, by the way, and they're just there to support you every step of the way. And trust me, this has been my experience with Podcorn. So check them out. I put a link to them in this episode's show notes. So check out podcorn.com today. Hey guys, welcome to the WWE podcast. We're going to get rolling in just a second here with your Monday Night Raw review that occurred last night on June 15th. So there's a lot to cover. I mean, really, really a lot to talk about with a single show, including a WWE trainee that tested positive for COVID-19. Ric Flair turns heel. Randy Orton punts Christian back into retirement. Lashley asks for a divorce or demands a divorce from Lana, and Nia Jax and the referee end up in a scuffle. Let's get it all started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Cause Stone Cold said so.
And welcome back again to your WWE podcast here, and a lot to get to with Monday Night Raw. Really a jam-packed show as far as news goes. Of course, you got the COVID-19 positive test. A WWE trainee tested positive for COVID-19, so we're going to get to that breaking story if you haven't already seen it on social media. So we're going to cover that in just a minute. But first, a little news on my Twitter account. I don't think it's coming back. And the reason I think it's not, it's been a month now. And I finally got a response from Twitter saying that it's been suspended for severe or multiple misuses of or violations of our platform manipulation rules. Yeah, real specific, right? I don't know. It looks like I'm suspended permanently. The reason I think it's permanent is because I tried to create another account and was successful, and it was suspended within a couple of hours. And then I was told I was suspended from the new account, which had like one follower, because I tried to evade permanent suspension. So I got suspended from being suspended. They have like locked me up and thrown away the key at this point. But you know what I say? Basically, F them. It sucks because I have spent many years growing my followers on Twitter. Many years. I mean, 9 years I've had that account. It sucks. And I'm starting from scratch. But I'm not going to be on Twitter. I can't even create another account. That's not an option. So what we're going to do is take our efforts elsewhere and move to Instagram and Facebook. I mean, seriously, just screw them. I have no option now but to go to Instagram and Facebook. And that's cool because I already have my username and passwords and everything else set up. So if you want to join me now on Instagram, You can do that at, and here's the username. It's WWE underscore podcast. So it's WWE underscore podcast. And you know what? That's cool because then I can put on a little video there. I can put pictures up. It's not as quick as Twitter is with responding during pay-per-views, which is kind of tough, but maybe I could do a live stream from Instagram on Instagram TV during a pay-per-view. I mean, there's lots of things here that we can do that Twitter doesn't offer. And again, it does suck after building an audience that Twitter just goes, oh, well, you know, we're done. So I guess they can go back to fact-checking Donald Trump's tweets and making sure that they are doing all those important things that Twitter does. So I'm not going to get political, but let's leave it there. And we're moving on. We're moving on to Twitter. And Facebook, by the way, it's just WWE Podcast on Facebook. So just search the WWE Podcast on Facebook. I believe it is just the WWE Podcast, facebook.com/the WWE Podcast. So follow us there as we shift our focuses away from the Twitter universe and into Facebook and Instagram. And hopefully we don't get suspended there for unknown reasons, right? So let's move on here, though, as we have breaking news from WWE that they have a WWE trainee who tested positive for COVID-19, a developmental talent. And here's what it says from Newsweek. This is where I'm getting it. I'm going to quote my source. That fans have not been in attendance at WWE events since March 13th. Yesterday, a select number of friends and family were permitted to attend WWE's television production. These individuals were required to participate in medical screenings prior to entering the closed Senator training facility and were kept apart from in-ring performers and production personnel. Attendance was below 20% capacity, and social distancing guidelines were adhered to with at least 6 feet between parties, thus face masks were not required. So that kind of speaks to the audience that we saw last night. I saw some old people. I mean, people with gray hair, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're not developmentals. So they clearly let in some friends and family, a very select, quote, audience. And so that explains that. But as far as the individual that tested positive for COVID, WWE announced Monday night that one of their developmental wrestlers has tested positive, and they informed the media that a developmental talent who's not on the NXT roster tested positive, and who was last in the promotion's training facility on Tuesday during June 9th during a taping of NXT. Following the news, WWE announced that the performer, staff, production crew, and employees will be tested for COVID-19 immediately. So they didn't exactly say who it was. Honestly, I don't know if it really matters if we have a name. But the fact of the matter is that the COVID-19 disaster has come to WWE. And hopefully it's a minor disaster. Hopefully it is something that is very contained and that this person didn't come into contact with too many people. Hopefully this is something that is, again, very minor. But it did slip into the WWE Performance Center, and it seemed as if the inevitable has happened, and WWE is now going to have to test again everybody that person could have possibly come in contact with. Hopefully no one else comes into contact with or test positive. But right now, WWE seems to be moving on with their schedule, their television production schedule. It does not seem like they are going to be stopping this anytime soon unless there's some kind of mass breakout. So let's move on to Monday Night Raw. And interesting Monday night, let me tell you. This was a very interesting Monday night, and Raw has been improving, in my opinion. I really think it has, and maybe I have a little bit of skewed vision when it comes to WWE production, because without fans there, we all know that it could be a much better show if fans were there. And I'm not talking about the drones in the audience that are just, you know, there's like 30 people in the audience. They're all spaced out and it doesn't feel like a true live audience other than it kind of feels like people are walking by and they're like, oh, what's this thing going on? And they just kind of gathered around this little indie show. And that's about how many people are there. And it does still hurt WWE to have so few fans in attendance. So, but Monday night, last night was honestly really interesting. And it was interesting on a lot of levels because you had Christian come out and interrupt Randy Orton at the beginning of Raw. And Randy Orton baits him into an unsanctioned match. And we all knew Christian was eventually going to take the bait, and he does, despite the plead from several stars that don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, especially Ric Flair, who was persistent on making sure that Christian didn't do it, and then he came out at the end and said that he spoke to Edge, and you don't need to do this, you have nothing left to prove. And lo and behold, we get the old dirtiest play in the game and his dirtiest move with the low blow. Nobody does a low blow like Ric Flair. I mean, he does it in a way that is just so like stylish. He makes a low blow look cool. I don't know what it is about the way he's always done a low blow. He puts his whole arm into it. And I love it. I find it hysterical when Ric Flair does low blows. But to be totally honest with you, I didn't see this coming. I did not see a Ric Flair low blow coming. And typically I can sniff something out like this a mile away, as many of you can. But I don't know about you, I did not see this coming. And the main reason I didn't see this coming is Ric Flair is like, you know, 70 years old. He is not going to be putting himself back into any kind of in-ring competition. Why would he do anything physical, number one? And number two, why would he turn himself heel when you can't have a payoff because he can't be an in-ring competitor? I mean, there's a couple of big barriers there that typically when a legend retires, they just automatically kind of shift into babyface mode because why turn them heel? There's no point. They can't have any kind of blow-off. They can't compete physically. So it was certainly a bit of a twist, if you ask me, and one that I actually said, what? I was sitting in my car. I was not driving. I was sitting in my car, just kind of hanging out, and my son was playing with stuff in the car. And I'm watching Raw, which is, you know, I have to, like, do double duty trying to find time to watch Raw. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I actually said out loud, I go, what? I did not see that coming. So is there a receipt for Ric Flair? I don't know. If there is, it's going to be a single punch. It's not going to be a vicious beatdown on a 70-year-old man. So maybe Christian just ends up, you know, laying a single punch on him. I think maybe that's the most they could possibly do. He'd be cleared for a single punch, and that's the receipt. Or maybe he'll end up low-blowing Ric Flair. I mean, you can also do that without any kind of risk, really. I mean, because you don't have to truly kick somebody in the nuts. You could do it in a way that is safe for all involved. So, again, the Ric Flair involvement surprised me, but it made sense given the history of Ric Flair and Randy Orton with Evolution. So there's that, which ended up being a aha moment for me. And then Randy Orton immediately going for the punt kick, which I'm very shocked they've brought back. To be totally honest with you, I love it. Don't get me wrong, I love it. I'm just shocked given the fact that they banned that move seemingly for years, and that Randy only threatens to do it at big events, but never actually able to connect. And in this case, he connected, and not for real, but he connected in the pro wrestling world and knocked Christian out and put him on a gurney. And it was kind of cool to see from the perspective that Christian coming back to me was a big deal, and having it happen on Raw was kind of unceremoniously unadvertised, got me a little suspicious. And given there was only 5 minutes left on my little ticker when I was watching it on Hulu, I'm like, there's 5 minutes left. Something ain't right. I mean, you know, you're not going to get a full blown match. Some kind of shenanigans are going to go down, and lo and behold, they did. But you had the one thing of Christian coming back out of retirement in kind of in street clothes, which was a nice touch. And I'm glad he didn't come out in his gear. That would have been insane. So that was kind of cool. And Christian gets punted by Randy. And the big thing here, beyond Ric Flair, beyond even Christian coming out of retirement, is the heat on Randy Orton. I don't know if you felt it, I felt it. I am tired of Randy Orton besting everyone he works with. And I mean that in a good way. I don't mean it as I'm complaining or critiquing. I mean it in a way that is like I'm feeling heel heat. I'm feeling heel heat for the first time in a long time where I want to see somebody come out there and leave Randy Orton laying. And I know WrestleMania happened with Edge. I know that. But it's, for some reason, that still wasn't satisfying. That I feel like we all got robbed. I'm sure Orton and Edge feel like they got robbed with no crowd there. And it wouldn't have been a backstage event if the crowd was there, obviously. So I think we all got robbed and we got a very, very neutered version of what could have been for WrestleMania. So that didn't really quench my thirst for an Edge return and a Randy Orton payoff. To no fault of WWE, no fault of Orton or Edge or any producers or anything like that. And then we get the really good match with Orton and Edge at the pay-per-view this past weekend with Backlash. That was, I really, really enjoyed it. Was it the best wrestling match ever? The greatest? No, it wasn't. Which, by the way, you can review my, or listen to my review of Backlash that I posted, was it last night? I'm losing track of days. Yeah, last night. So you can check that out there, but I love the match. I really did. It was very well done. It wasn't cheesy, and they had a nice, they did it authentically. They didn't do it with a wink and a nod and a ha-ha, let's do special effects. I think it was a nice touch, and I did enjoy it. But that ended up having Randy Orton still come out on top. So you have Randy Orton coming out on top again, and then now he's beating on Christian. So I feel like we still haven't gotten the finally Randy Orton got what's coming to him moment. Again, you could point to WrestleMania and say, oh, he got the concerto, right? You know, Edge got the concerto on Randy Orton. But to me, things happening backstage don't have the magnitude that they do if they happen inside the ring. Inside the ring is the home. It is the sanctuary. Outside of the ring is exactly that. It's kind of just no man's land. Wacky things happen. It doesn't feel like it's centralized. It doesn't feel like it means as much if it happens backstage. When things happen in the ring, it feels like it means more. Just like, for example, take this for example. When Kevin Owens hits a stunner on Angel Garza on the outside of the ring, it doesn't feel right, or it doesn't feel as impactful as it would have if it was done inside the ring. There's just something about that platform that makes it shines a spotlight brighter on it. So again, all of this ties into Randy Orton. I'm loving what he's doing. It seems like he has gotten a breath of fresh air, and having Edge tear his bicep or tricep rather, and get it surgically repaired. It looks like he's out 6 to 9 months. I estimated 4 to 5 last night. He could have a Miracle John Cena comeback. But if you do the math, let's do the math, folks. So if it is 6 to 9 months, where does that place us? Well, in 6 months, if this timetable is accurate, puts us in mid-December. 7 months puts us in January. 8 months puts us in February. 9 months puts us in March. This could work out perfectly for Edge. Because they put very clearly last night said that Edge is going to go out on his terms. He will be back and he's going to get a piece of you. So clearly this program isn't over and I'm loving it. Because here's what I think may happen. Again, this could be a quicker return, or it could be on the higher end of that projection of 6 to 9 months in which he would be back in just in time for WrestleMania. So if he's back in time for WrestleMania, it's almost as if Edge gets a redo here. Edge gets a mulligan. And that's actually really good. I mean, it sounds crazy, but is it almost a good thing that Edge got injured? I said this last night. Is it almost a good thing that Edge got injured based on the timing? Because in 6 to 9 months, I would anticipate by in 6 to 9 months from now, we probably will be back to some kind of pre-virus normalcy, where we do have arenas at least being partially filled. You know, we do have live fans, not the drones of WWE and the friends and family of the drones of WWE. And when I say drones, I mean that they're not going to boo who they shouldn't boo or cheer for who they shouldn't cheer for. That's what I mean. But it's still nice to hear the noise. Don't get me wrong. So I would assume by 6 to 9 months, we should have some kind of normalcy back in our lives and our sports lives. So that's what I'm pointing to. And this could be a great redo for Edge, because it would time him out perfectly for a possible Royal Rumble re-debut. How cool would that be? Right? How cool would that be to have Edge re-debut in the spot that he came in this past year? Maybe it's number 21 again. Maybe it's number 22. But to me, that's the timeline I'm looking at. If I'm Edge, I'm pissed. This isn't, to me, it's not a career-ending injury. I'm sorry, tricep injury is not a career-ending injury. Right? You know why it's usually not? Because it's not a joint. It's not the elbow. It's not a knee. It's not a neck, God forbid. Joints are harder to repair because there's a lot of moving parts. So a tricep to me, it's a muscle. Yeah, it tore from the bone. It was an awful tear. And, you know, obviously very painful, I'm sure. I'm not downplaying the severity of the injury. My point is, though, that in the log or world of injuries that sports and athletes and professional wrestlers can get, this is certainly not one up there that's like, oh man, that's a career-ending injury for a tricep. No, it's not. Tricep is one of the smaller muscles in the body. So let's just put this in perspective. And to be honest, I mean, I'm looking forward to January. I mean, and I think that's where we should be looking, is Edge coming back in the Royal Rumble. That would be so apropos and poetic, wouldn't it? That Edge gets a redo. Randy Orton's dominating the Royal Rumble. Dominating. RKO. He's hot as hell as a heel. People hate him. He's tossing out the guys that you think have a chance to win. And he clears the ring, and who comes back? You think you know me. Think about that. I mean, just visualize that. I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, damn. And you could have Michael Cole saying, after 9 months, or however long he's out at that point, 6 months, 7 months, Edge has been thinking about this moment, thinking about retribution. Look at Randy Orton's face. He can't believe it, right? Setting up for WrestleMania next year, Edge versus Orton. I think it writes itself. Because you don't have to fill the next 7 months of Edge trying to find somebody to work with. It's just, to me, writes itself. And this is a blessing in disguise. Because it's going to time out perfectly for WrestleMania and Royal Rumble next year. So, how about that for those that want a silver lining about Edge being out for the next 6 to 9 months? There it is. All right, but as far as Christian goes, hell. I mean, I have always enjoyed Randy Orton and Christian. If you go back, Randy Orton and Christian have some of the best chemistry that you'll ever see. Randy Orton, of course, is just a otherworldly in terms of his talent. We all know this. But him and Christian just have an extra gear that they go to. And Randy Orton has gone on the record many times saying that Christian is one of his favorite opponents, the way that they work together. And I agree. So here's how I think the Christian thing is going to go with Orton. Christian is out for probably the next couple of weeks. And look what pay-per-view's next. Extreme Rules. So could this be a story that Randy Orton and Christian go all the way to SummerSlam to? Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think probably that's where they're going. There's no need to rush anything right now. There's no need to hotshot things. I would let things play out until they die. I wouldn't Baron Corbin and Roman Reigns the storyline where it just is an eternity of hell. But I would go as far as I can before it starts to feel really stale. Like you're chewing the same piece of gum. It's like, all right, it's starting to lose its flavor. Let's move on. And Christian and Orton have a great story to tell. They have a lot of history that they could play on. They I think Christian is still able to go. I have not heard about his physical status in terms of, can he still go? Does he have anything left? All that kind of thing. I would assume that they do. They just did a big angle at the end of Raw. It would be foolish for them not to pay this off. So I think that's where they go. Maybe it is at Extreme Rules, but more than likely, I think it's set up for SummerSlam. That's where I'm looking for. Randy Orton versus Christian. Christian is trying to avenge his best friend's loss and his injury. The story, I think, is there for the taking. And I think Randy Orton may go over there. To me, I would have Randy Orton beat Christian. I really would. There's no need to have Christian win. Because Christian, I don't believe, is here for a long time. He's here for a good time. Hey, how about that? I don't think I've ever said that on this show. So that's where I think it's headed, and I'm loving it. I really loved this angle. The ending to Raw made me forget that there was nobody in the audience, for the most part, right? I mean, yes, there were people there, but it made me forget about things going on. It immersed me in the story. Well done all around. Randy Orton, to me, is the MVP right now of Raw. And so speaking of MVP, how about that for a transition? Is it any more valuable for Bobby Lashley to have MVP than right now? I mean, Bobby Lashley showed you on Raw why he needs a mouthpiece. He couldn't even cut a promo that made sense. Listen to his promo. I mean, when he was able to speak on the mic, he didn't make any sense. And the whole Lana deal, having him say he wants a divorce, I mean, didn't come a minute too soon. He needs to, and I said this last night, so I'm not going to go on another rant, but I'll very calmly say right now, the sooner he and Lana separate forever on Monday Night Raw, the better. I don't know what Lana's going to do. To be totally frank, I don't care. I don't care what Lana does. Because Lana is, to me, just kind of lost. And I don't know what they have in store for her. Maybe it's a bunch of nothing. Maybe she goes into the women's division. I don't know. But it really is, to me, about Bobby Lashley. And he needs to separate himself. And that looks like the way they're going with Bobby Lashley. And alleluia. So that's great that he said he's getting a divorce. Hopefully they don't string this out and they get lawyers and it's this big to do and they have to have a presentation of the divorce and he signs the papers, but she said she won't unless he does X. I mean, I hope they don't play this whole thing out, right? Something tells me that it's possible that this is not just let me sign him and mail him to you. Very unlikely. This is WWE world. Something wacky is going to happen where there's a stipulation that she'll only sign them if Bobby does this, right? Something, Bobby's going to have to give up something for Lana to sign those papers. So get prepared for something like that. And Bobby Lashley to me is being dragged down by Lana and not in a good way. And MVP has said it all. He's saying things that are actually very true about Lana's presence. So, and my God, MVP is just so good. MVP is, I was like, where has this been? Right? Where has this been? And I know he can still go inside the ring. He's serviceable in the ring. But to me, he does not belong in the ring. He's good to take bumps. He's good to occasionally get in physically involved and again, take his lumps for Lashley because he can clearly still go. He's medically cleared to go. But I don't think he's doing himself any favors also competing with Bobby Lashley. It's like he's kind of a hybrid. I want to see him just defined as a manager. Again, me being selfish, but I'm sure MVP enjoys being in the ring as well. So, but okay, let's take a quick break. And then on the other side, we're going to get to Dominic getting a hit and run on Seth Rollins, the Viking Raiders and the Street Profits defeating the Ninjas. So yeah, we got some important stuff to talk about on the other side of this. So stay right here. We'll be right back.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
There's nothing like a great cup of coffee. And Nautical Star Coffee carry delicious coffee in their online store that tastes amazing, and it's made fresh to order. Located in North Carolina, Nautical Star Coffee wants to be your go-to online coffee store. Like you, they were tired of the same old mediocre coffee that cost a fortune but had little flavor to show for it. At Nautical Star Coffee, there's no minimum purchase required. Sometimes you just want one bag of coffee, and that's fine with them. Their coffee is roasted, bagged, and shipped at the time of your order to ensure freshness. They search for the best coffee blends from Honduras, Colombia, and Costa Rica to give you the greatest cup of coffee. They're also veteran-owned and operated and truly value your coffee needs. If you want the coffee labeled with your own logo, let them know. They can do that for you. Perfect for restaurants that want to have their own coffee brand, and great for your local company or small business, too. Start shopping right now at nauticalstarcoffee.com. That's nauticalstarcoffee.com.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
All right, let's get back to some of the most important pieces of Monday Night Raw. And boy, do I say that with a wink and a nod and big air quotes and very facetiously, the ninjas, right? The ninjas are back, and they, you know, I was hoping it was a one-night-only deal. Clearly it's not. Akira Tozawa has taken up martial arts and brought back a 1980s crew from a B-rated movie and is now running amok on Monday Night Raw. And we further, to further that, we have the Viking Prophets, who are a team, but they occasionally can compete for the Raw Tag Team Championships. Oh yeah, those are a thing too. Don't forget, the Raw Tag Team Championships are still a thing. It was, I mean, at least, let me say this. And you guys know I ripped this match, and I say that loosely, a new one on my Backlash review, which is one of the only few things I didn't like about Backlash. As a whole, I really enjoyed the show. But at least these guys were in the ring. It wasn't some backstage nonsense that they did, and you know, Montez Ford holds up his solo cup that he got from the frat house down the street and is talking about wanting the smoke and all these things. And to be totally honest, the Street Profits have gone through a weird phase. Weird. When you look at the Street Profits, originally when they debuted, they weren't even in ring. They were doing silly raps backstage, talking about everybody, making nonsense. Nonsensical raps that were not entertaining, not funny. They weren't clever. They were just obnoxious, yet they were billed as baby faces, and they were talking to the camera, and it was just terrible. Terrible. If you're trying to get them over as baby faces. And then they finally got into the ring, and we said, whoa, these guys can go. These guys can go bell to bell. They have the physical prowess to go and put on a great match. And Montez Ford is freaky athletic and all of that kind of thing. They win the tag team championships, and then they stop defending them, and they decide to go play basketball and play bowling, like on a rock and bowl night. That's at least what they call it here, where like it's a, I don't know, 9 to midnight, and you can bowl with the lights off, and there's like glow in the dark stuff. We call it rock and bowl around here, but nonetheless, then they do track and field, doing pole vault and doing hurdles and all of this garbage, because apparently it's more important than defending your tag team championships and getting paid six figures to be in a company that we're all supposed to believe that you scratched and clawed to get to, and you're doing silly antics and WWE approves of it. I mean, it's not funny in any capacity whatsoever. So tearing all that down, the good thing was they were in the ring this week, actually in in-ring competition. So that was a positive. And having the Street Profits face the ninjas was as silly as you probably would imagine. The only positive out of this is Akira Tozawa and his right-hand man, whoever that is, the big tall guy who, you know, looks like, if you've seen Game of Thrones, it looks like the Mountain who protected... who was it? Cersei And it's those of you who have never watched Game of Thrones are like, who the hell are you talking about? But it's the mountain. Those of you that have seen Game of Thrones, that's kind of what they look like here, or he looked like. If it's a direct ripoff, fine. I'm a huge fan of the show. I loved Game of Thrones other than last season. I'm interested to see who he is, right? If they're going to take this seriously, fine. I'll take it seriously. But if they're going to take it tongue-in-cheek, then I'm going to roll my eyes and just destroy this segment every week on my show, which I'm sure they're very concerned about. So that's really the hook for me, is this tall, big man that is really the right hand of Akira Tozawa. And why in the hell the Big Show needed to come out when it was already 4-on-2, by the way, at the end of the match, and we had the Viking Raiders and we had the Street Profits standing in the ring with Akira Tozawa and his right-hand man, whoever he may be. It was already 4-on-2 at that point. Why did the Big Show need to come out? But was 4-on-2 not enough? You needed the Big Show? I don't understand. But Big Show comes out and does his 58th flip of his career and goes back to babyface after playing the heel of challenging Drew McIntyre after his win at WrestleMania against Brock Lesnar, at which he played the heel. So Big Show is just really a parody of himself at this point. It's Big Show just being Big Show. You don't know which version you're going to get. So he comes out and ends up, I guess, I would say evening the odds, but the odds weren't even. And he cleared the group. And Tozawa and his giant ninja left. And it was just weird. I don't know what to make of this. The tag team titles haven't been defended in over 2 months. But Tozawa back on TV is a good thing, I guess, for those that are fans of Tozawa. In a role that is certainly more interesting than his previous. But you gotta really, really have a, you know, just transplant your brain for the time that you see this ninja stuff. Until they take it seriously, I'm not going to. So, all right. Next up is Dominic and Seth Rollins. You know, I think that this was done pretty well. It was as well as I think it could have gone. And I think WWE is building nicely with Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. And they're not making Rey Mysterio's eye injury a joke. I mean, this happened a month ago, I think. And it would make sense that he is still not cleared. They haven't just rushed him back. I like that. They're playing the long game. They have time to play the long game. I'm all for it. This is a nice feud. This is a program that is over-delivering for me with Rey Mysterio and Seth, which ultimately is the goal that they're going for in a one-on-one at WrestleMania. At SummerSlam, I would think. I think Extreme Rules is probably a little too soon, or maybe he somehow is able to compete with one eye. I don't know, but to me, this has legs to go to pay-per-views, culminating at SummerSlam. So I'm liking this. Seth Rollins and his delusional, you know, you were the sacrifice. You should be thanking me. You're for the greater good, all this kind of thing. And having Dominic come out and attack Rollins from behind as Rollins was on his knees made sense, because yes, Dominic is playing the babyface, but you know that his cronies of Murphy and Austin Theory are not far behind. So if you're going to take your shot, you got to do it the way you got to do it, right? I mean, it was fine in that case, and he got a couple of licks in before he was able to escape through the crowd and leaving Rollins seething. So this is all around good, and Dominic showed a little bit of athleticism, and it's clear that I think he's going to get in the ring with his father to face these three at some point. It'll be a 3-on-2 handicap match, maybe at Extreme Rules, maybe at SummerSlam. So this it's playing out nicely, because it's not being overexposed. Rey Mysterio is doing a great job. Rollins is really starting to come into his own with that character. He has cronies that can do his bidding. It's really all working well. I don't have a whole lot to complain about in this angle. It's progressing just at a nice pace every week. The Iconics defeated Liv Morgan and Natalya via pinfall. I don't know what to say, because it didn't mean a whole lot, because Liv Morgan doesn't mean a whole lot, at least how she's defined right now. When Bayley and Banks didn't come to the ring, they said that the match would be made for next week. Later in the show, Bayley accepted the match after an iconic slap to the face of Banks. So that was after the match when the Iconics threw down a challenge for Bayley and Sasha to face them in a tag title match instead of having to wrestle in a triple threat like at Backlash. So that'll be a nice setup for next week. Then on the show, we had Apollo Crews defeating Shelton Benjamin after the dreaded, look out, the dreaded, devastating, just absolutely crushing finish that is taking over WWE, the dreaded roll-up. Yeah, it's the unescapable maneuver that WWE has right now, the roll-up, where, I mean, if you use it, forget it. It's over. I mean, you could super kick, you could drop somebody on their head, you could kick them in the face, you could, you know, whatever it may be, and no, that's not going to do it. But what will do it? The roll-up. So keep that in mind, everybody. Make that your new finish. It's crazy. So Apollo Crews wins again against Shelton Benjamin. And the way he won was a little bit curious because, yes, Shelton Benjamin tried to cheat to win, and then Crews used his own roll-up and grabbed onto the ropes to secure the pin. So I guess you could say that it was tit for tat, and I don't think it was a heel turn. So I don't know why we had to use that, or why WWE had to use that, though. Shelton Benjamin is a guy that is, I'm sorry, he's a glorified enhancement talent at this point in his career. And why Apollo Crews needed to be produced to take this road rather than just straight up winning, if he's your United States champion and you're trying to build around him and you're trying to build him as a credible champion, why are you having him use heel tactics to win a match just because the heel tried it and he didn't do it, so now he's going to show him, you know, give him a taste of his own medicine? To me, that's not enough. It's not a good reason. I'm kind of over also this idea that Vince McMahon has to stick into the minds of babyfaces that when they win a championship, especially for the first time, that they have to state that they're going to be a fighting champion. They're going to defend it anytime, anywhere, against anybody. It's a little bit stomach churning. It's kind of eye rolling. It's like, you want me to say my prayers and take my vitamins too? It's just too wholesome and goody. Like, somebody with an edge. If I have a championship that I busted my ass to get, am I going to just let anybody challenge me for it? No. You know why I'm not going to? Number one, I took a long time to get it. But number two, it devalues the championship itself because anybody could challenge me? No, that's not how this works. You need to scratch your way to the top because the belt, the championship deserves it. That's why. If you allow anybody at any time, well, then it's not so special because just because you want to be perceived as a fighting champion and make sure that everyone, you know, oh, that's an admirable trait. For somebody, I mean, that's likable. People like when, you know, you put the channel on the line. It shows that you're not gonna run from a fight. You're gonna put this up anytime. Well, no, that's not the case. How about I will fight anybody anywhere anytime, but to get a shot at this championship, they need to earn it. A simple tweak in message. Yet WWE continues to just shove down the throats of fans the old tired speech of new champions or aspiring champions that I will defend it anytime, anywhere. I'm going to be a fighting champion. Shut up. Stop. I see what they're trying to do, number one. And number two, it devalues the championship itself. Yeah. And again, the benefit of telling me you're a fighting champion versus the benefit of only allowing championships to be fought from guys and girls that earn it. Do the math. Okay. I think I've said my piece. Okay. And then in the main event, I'm sorry, not in the main event. In the semi-main, we got Drew McIntyre and R-Truth defeating Bobby Lashley and MVP via pinfall. This was for the WWE Championship. Originally, it was for the 24/7 title and the WWE Championship in a winner-take-all. And McIntyre was getting annoyed with R-Truth because he wasn't getting it. That how serious of what a challenge he accepted was, and the magnitude of the situation. And R-Truth was not getting it. And McIntyre was upset, and rightfully so, that he didn't have to be involved in the decision that if R-Truth took the pinfall, he loses the championship. So it was a nice hook. That type of matchup hasn't happened in a very long time. I was fine with it. Having Drew McIntyre retain made total sense. I mean, anybody that thought that there was a chance that the title would change hands in that way, on that format, in that stage, on Raw, I mean, you just haven't watched wrestling for more than a week. So MVP took the pinfall, and that's when the whole I want a divorce announcement took place. So the last thing I want to talk about that happened on Monday night, let me take a little sip of water here because I got to get ready for this one, was the Raw Women's Championship. Asuka again defeating Nia Jax via pinfall to retain. And look out, folks. Look out. The dreaded roll-up of doom strikes again. It's just insane. If somebody needs to, and maybe it should just be me, but I don't have the time, do the percentage of matchups that end in a roll-up or some kind of schoolboy or some kind of sneak pin that ends in that. And I'll even exclude the 24/7 title, of which I'm sure 90%+ of the decisions and title changes happen via a roll-up from behind. I'll exclude the 24/7 title. I'm talking about just, you know, matches that actually matter. How many end in a roll-up or a schoolboy? Please tell me. It's got to be like 30-40%. It's a stupid high number. Which means everything that you did in the match mean nothing, because if the roll-up is so damn effective, go for the roll-up. Right? Apparently, you know, a kick to the jaw is good for a two count. But boy, oh boy, when you put me on my back, I can't roll out of it. I just can't do it. It's so stupid. Especially with the power of Nia Jax. It makes no sense. And furthermore, how did she get this championship match? What happened to the rematches are antiquated? What the hell happened to that? Okay, but the match was okay. The match was okay. It's pretty much the same format that you saw at Backlash. Nothing really to write home about here. The big thing here was Nia Jax ending up shoving the ref to the floor. And this happened after Asuka made a comeback before Nia Jax cut her off. Or cut off a kick flurry with a big headbutt and a Samoan drop, but Asuka's foot was under the bottom rope. So Jax got frustrated with the referee and shoved him to the floor. And as the referee was about to call for the DQ, Asuka did the dreaded roll up with the schoolboy pin for the victory. And again, look out for the roll-up, and it was the slowest roll-up in the history of roll-ups. I mean, given the size of Nia Jax, she doesn't exactly fall with grace. It's just physics. It didn't look good, but it was the finish of the match, and they did the best they could. So we had Nia Jax shove the referee. Why did the referee even have to think? Right? Why did the referee even have to think about disqualifying Nia Jax? You don't put your hands on an official. Is it because she's a woman? I'm not really sure, but this was very confusing as to why he did not decide to just immediately disqualify her. There should have been no thinking. But that was not the story to be told. So the story to be told was that he did a quick three count instead. If Nia Jax gets angry at that, I mean, you were going to get disqualified anyway. So you were losing the match anyway. It was either you get disqualified or I do a quick three count. I mean, you take your pick. So I guess maybe he'll be scolded for doing a quick three count. And on the record, it shows that Asuka pinned Nia Jax rather than Asuka just being, or Nia Jax just being disqualified. So this is clearly leading to a Extreme Rules match at Extreme Rules, which makes sense because they're talking about the DQ and the count outs, right? So they've now had a DQ finish and a count out finish. And at Extreme Rules, Nia Jax can say that none of that can happen, right? So that Asuka has nowhere to escape and has no way to retain the championship. And that at Extreme Rules, you can't go anywhere and, you know, I'm going to beat you. So that is the story they're telling about all the things that aren't going to be able to happen at Extreme Rules with the things that are happening now with DQs and countouts. One last thing that I want to touch on, as Lana was out there, I know I'm switching gears, but Lana coming out and talking to Bobby Lashley, when she said, "You can't talk to me like that, I'm a woman." So, oh boy, this is I'm treading on dangerous ground here, but I don't care. So apparently being a woman is a way, just gives you a shield of immunity from criticism, or gives you a shield of immunity from hearing what needs to be said. I mean, why she even said I'm a woman, as if it's some kind of shield of armor or some kind of like ace in the hole that she has, that she thinks she can play, that made no sense. And it was just like, wait, okay. And I'm a guy. I'm a man. Okay. But it just kind of played into, I think, a little bit of politics in today's society, right? I'll leave it at that. I don't want to go any further because this could get very political very quickly. So, but it was just interesting. When she said that, I'm like, huh? Like, great. Wonderful. You are a woman. That's wonderful. How does that absolve you from anything just because you're a woman? Just like when the women consistently slap the men in WWE, and then the men stand there as if they can't do anything because they're a woman. So that just, again, this is a physical example, but apparently the women in WWE, again, this is all storyline. We're not talking about real life, we're talking about storyline. But you could kind of equate this to real life if you want to. Apparently, if you're a woman in WWE, being a woman allows you to commit assault with no retaliation because you're a woman. Oh, men are much stronger. Well, great, then don't hit men. It would be foolish to hit a man who is 6 times stronger than you. And you, as a woman, think that just because you're a woman absolves you from any kind of laws that may be applicable in your life and in your in the United States. So, and furthermore, in WWE, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about fantasy environment, why the men have to stand there. And I get it. They're not doing it because promote domestic violence. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. All right. Well, I'm going off the rails. But guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. May have angered some of you, but that's cool. I mean, that's what the show's about, is just speaking my mind. And if you guys love the show or hate it, yeah, let me know, because I'm always trying to improve this show. I really want you guys to enjoy it. I love doing this. And again, just once again, my Twitter account seems to be permanently suspended. So we are moving to Instagram, which is at WWE_podcast. There's no the. It's just WWE_podcast. I only have like 700 followers right now because I haven't really done a whole lot with it. Twitter has been my main focus, but seems to not be any longer. And again, Facebook at facebook.com/theWWEpodcast. So we're going to really be moving and focusing on those social platforms as we move forward here, because Twitter is no longer an option. Even creating a new account, not an option. So, the schedule for the rest of the week. Tomorrow is a From the Vault version of Wrestling Nostalgia. I was really going to do the Wrestling Nostalgia version of just reviewing Undertaker Chapter 4 of The Last Ride. I was going to do that. I have prior commitments. I won't be able to do anything tomorrow night, so it's going to be a From the Vault version. But I'll dig one up that's good, and I promise I will do a review of Chapter 4 of The Undertaker Last Ride, because it was just awesome. Awesome. You know, whoever created this series deserves, like, you know, an Academy Award, like, or a Golden Globe. I'm really bad at awards and what means what. They deserve an award. Okay, Academy Awards is TV or movies? I don't know. I don't watch award shows. You get the gist of what I'm saying. But seriously, it is awesome. So I will be reviewing that at some point in the near future. But after tomorrow, AEW and NXT come to you on Thursday. The reviews from Zach and Jeff. And I know you guys are loving the reviews that they do. I am passing that feedback along. And then on Saturday is going to be your SmackDown review with our team of Brian and Jeff. Really looking forward to their analysis. And then Sunday, I'll be back with your weekend review. So many more shows coming to you this week. Head on over to the website at WWEpodcast.com. As I'm silenced from Twitter, I will be now really just starting to focus on other things that I have been neglecting. Website, Instagram, Facebook, and get things rolling where I can. And not I'm not silenced. Can't silence me here. This is my own damn show. So a big F you to Twitter. Yeah, I'm giving the emoji that has the single finger up. And you can guess which one that is. So I wish I could be back. I miss all you guys on Twitter. Trust me. But I'll be able to interact with you guys live. I'll be doing some live streaming and moving into that kind of thing. So we will not be silenced, right? I think that's kind of a thing right now, right? All right. Well, anyway, guys, thanks so much for listening. And as always, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.